adventures.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a special interview episode from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show. And it's early in the morning here on the Pacific Coast of America. And on the line with us is occult writer and researcher, I should say researcher and writer into the occult, Tracy Twyman. Thanks so much for taking the time to discuss the royal rituals.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great that we can do this interview literally an hour or so after it finished. So this is like real time, people.
Exactly.
You'll hear it later today, and this is breaking news. We have some hot off the presses analysis of this wedding that you're not going to get anywhere else.
So before I kind of give you the floor, I know we can think of many reasons why we shouldn't really be paying attention to this, with the movements in, you know, Obama's national security team moving the head of the CIA to the Pentagon and vice versa. And of course, the narcotics and the wars and all those things keep going, and Bernanke and press conferences and our financial situation. So there's any number of reasons why you can, I think, correctly say that a lot of this is a distraction. However, there is so very much going on in the world with this wedding, with the papal beatification, with the shuttle launch, and all of those things that are kind of swirling around there. So why should we be paying attention to this?
Well, because I think that the world is changing rapidly, and that we can't accurately predict what is going to happen in the next few years, how the institutions of power are going to change. And for people to dismiss the monarchy as a distraction, as a just something for entertainment and to bring tourists in, is really not accurate, for one thing, and it may be even less accurate in the future, as things might very well change, where the monarch in the future may choose to exercise more of their ancient rights, more of their the actual traditional role that they are entitled to play in the governing of their kingdom. That right now the queen chooses to sort of take a back door to parliament, but she still has that power. She's still in charge. And, Charles has basically said that he intends to exercise more power and influence than his mother has when he ascends to the throne, if he does. And, and then William is a huge star in England, and it was certainly more well-liked than the actual elected government. And I'm just saying, don't throw it out of possibility that William or Charles may at any point actually be a very influential figure in geopolitics. Not to mention the fact that what I'm going to talk about tonight is ritual elements within the royal wedding and surrounding the monarchy itself that are interesting. If nothing else, it's it just goes to show that some of the things that people say, conspiracy theorists say about the elite and their obsession with ritual, and a lot of people think that Satanists run the world. I think that to a certain extent they're maybe onto something. I don't know about the Satanist part necessarily, but definitely these people are steeped in ritual and in ancient mythology. And when it comes to the royal families, that's what they do. That's what their entire role is. The origin of kingship is all about the concept that the king is sort of God incarnate, or literally blood related to the gods of the ancient world. And that when they are sitting on their throne, they're embodying God on earth and being a conduit between heaven and earth. So in the olden times, a king or a queen, their health and well-being was seen as influential of the kingdom at large. If they were doing well, then it was thought of that's going to reflect well on the kingdom. And their fertility was thought of as being connected to the fertility and wealth of the land. And so this whole, what I'm talking about, a ritual going on with this wedding, is connected with a very ancient ritual that was about this sacred connection between the king and the queen and the fertility of the land. It's this ancient fertility ritual of Beltane, or May Day, in which the ceremonial marriage is celebrated of the king and queen of the May, or they really represent this larger metaphor of the queen Diana, the goddess of the ancient world, and what's called in the rituals the king of the wood, or in some cases they overtly refer to him as Jupiter or Saturn, but it's this king of the world figure, this ancient, the god of the ancient world, and also the first king of the ancient world, and the prototype of kingship. And this queen figure, this goddess figure that's celebrated in the May Day ceremonies, is really the prototype of, queenship in the ancient world. So, in this ancient ceremony, which takes place on April 30th, April 30th is like the eve of May Day. It's called Walpurgis Night. There traditionally were these fertility rituals in which they would elect a king and queen of the May to represent this idea, and they would treat them as though they were actually, king and queen, and sort of go through the ritual of it. And then at the end of the festival, they would sacrifice them. And during the festival, there's all these sexual rites taking place. And and all of this is supposed to influence the fertility of the land somehow. And that the symbolism of this ceremony, as I can explain, is embedded in this entire royal ritual. So what do you think of that?
No, that's great. And I was going to say that we both just watched the live stream of these events. And so some of those things that you've now mentioned, the Walpurgis, as well as, of course, Diana, and that has multiple meanings to it. So can you kind of break down maybe what we just witnessed in the actual ceremony, and also the Kosmati pavement and some of the trappings?
Sure, yeah. Well, first, I guess I'd like to back up a little bit of what I said, having to do with some of the symbolism around this date of, it was April 29th technically when it happened, but it's very close to this April 30th date. But there's some interesting things about April 29th itself as well. It's the feast day of St. Catherine, who Kate Middleton is named after. And St. Catherine was known for her mystic marriage to Christ. She was a virgin, but she had this vision in which she was married to Christ, and Jesus put this ring on her finger and crowned her as the queen, his queen. And so, you have this feast day of St. Catherine that Catherine herself is named after, and this imagery of this virgin queen, which ties in so many ways. The virgin queen is Diana. Diana, the goddess, was known for being a virgin. She never wanted to marry, and she would kill anyone who tried to woo her or who saw her naked. And so there's something, that, for some reason, that's important in the mythology, that, you've got this goddess that's known for being a married virgin queen, and yet in the ritual, she's getting, deflowered, the ancient ritual. It was like she's both a virgin and not a virgin at the same time. There's some sort of weird sort of dualistic symbolism going on in the ancient ritual, where you're supposed to celebrate this woman as the virgin queen, and yet you're being confronted at the same time with something that proves that she's actually the opposite of that. She's not a virgin. It's this very weird, deep dualistic symbolism embedded in the ancient May Day ritual. So you've got this virgin queen thing going on with Diana and St. Catherine, and also with Elizabeth. That's Elizabeth I of England, was known as the virgin queen. She molded herself after the Virgin Mary in her imagery, and you know, supposedly was a virgin herself. So, you know, Elizabeth's Catherine's middle name, also obviously the name of Queen Elizabeth Williams' grandmother. And just one more connection having to do with this Virgin Queen stuff. Kate Middleton was born on January 9th, which is the feast day of St. Basilisa. Basil means king, so Basilisa kind of means King Lisa or King or Queen Elizabeth. It literally means that. And she was known for having remained a virgin after her wedding date. She convinced her husband not to consummate their marriage, and they went on to a martyr's death as virgins. So there's another one. And then the Catholic Church celebrates May Day as the day that the Virgin Mary was crowned as the Queen of the May. They celebrate May Day as well. They just have a Christian veneer on it. And in the Catholic pantheon, I guess you could say, the Virgin Mary is the Queen of Heaven, the Queen of the May, the same imagery as the Queen Diana. So you've got all this Virgin Queen stuff going on with the date and with Catherine herself. And then, of course, there's, you know, Prince William's mother, Diana, who is a living embodiment of this concept of the goddess. And she seems to be a very major part of this wedding herself, because William gave the ring, the same engagement ring that his father gave his mother, and he just gave it to his fiance, now his bride. So it's like he's regurgitating that relationship. It's so weird, you know. It's so weird to give a ring from your dead mother's failed marriage to your new bride, but that's mm-hmm. what they did. And then there's other stuff that they've been doing lately that just indicates that, you know, he's very much still hung up on his mother.
And his middle name, and one of his names is Arthur, isn't it? And some have speculated that he would take the name King Arthur.
Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. You know, I think technically they're allowed to take whatever kind of name they want to after they become king or queen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, generally they use one of the multiple middle names that they have. And, yeah, Arthur's one of them. And there have been a number of references to William and Diana and the whole House of Windsor being connected to Camelot and Arthurian imagery. And some of it came from Diana's own mouth. She supposedly at one point said to one of her friends, this is in a biography about her, that she thought William was going to grow up to rebuild Camelot. And then she said, "I will be his Merlin," which is a weird thing. You know? Like she'll be this sort of semi-demonic figure speaking to him from the other world, trying to influence his decisions and giving him prognostications. I mean, that's the role that Merlin played for King Arthur. And the thing that makes that interesting is that William's blood is really more directly connected to the so-called Grail bloodline, you know, the Merovingian bloodline going back to Jesus, which continued through the Scottish monarchs, through the House of Stuart, which his mother, Diana Spencer, was directly related to, more so than his father and the Queen. So he's got this blood in him coming from Jesus that's more, I guess, concentrated than the blood that he's getting from his own royal line. So what I'm saying is that, like, he's more royal than his own ancestors, than the Queen or Charles. And at one point, Diana also noted this. There was a moment in which she was sort of speaking to the Queen and kind of pointed out to the Queen, "Hey, I've got more royal blood than you, so, you know, watch it. Stop trying to push me around." So, William can be seen very much as a potential you know, King Arthur figure or Grail King figure. You know, he carries that blood more so not only than his own parents, but more than any monarch who's actually ever sat on that throne. So, you know, he's kind of the most royal monarch potentially that we've ever had on that throne.
Now, we were kind of discussing off mic some of the things during the ceremony that we're going to need more time to kind of dissect, and what really went down kind of in the program, and what did they do when they went off stage and were all kind of hidden away. But what about some of the things that we do know and some of the things you've already written about, such as the platform that this ceremony took place on?
Oh, yeah, that was amazing. They've rediscovered the floor of Westminster Abbey. It's been covered by a carpet for the last 150 years until a couple years ago when they decided to look underneath it and restore this mosaic that's underneath it, which is now called the Kosmati pavement. It's actually, apparently there's more than one Kosmati pavement in the world. It's a style of mosaic, but, you know, it's sort of, that's become the name of this this floor. And what it is it was commissioned by, I believe, Henry the Third, I think, during what would have been the 13th century. And it's like, it kind of represents the universe, and in the center of it is this, what's supposed to be the center of the universe and the ball of chaos out of which the universe was formed initially. So this whole mosaic kind of represents the beginning and end of time, the beginning and end of the universe, the entirety of the cosmos, and in the center of that is where the king or queen is always coronated. But for 150 years, that was covered by a carpet, but they were still doing it on that one sacred spot in the center. But the interesting thing about the pavement beyond that is the code within it. There's a Latin inscription on it that says exactly how long the earth is supposed to last. It's a riddle, a numeric code, and when you solve it, it tells you that the earth is going to last, 19,638, I want to say. So, yeah, 19,638 years. It doesn't say when that starts, but if you figure that people back then kind of took the Bible literally and they believed that the earth was, you know, at this point, according to that reckoning, it would be only about 6,000 years old now. So that's the way they thought during that time period, and that's my opinion. I think that's when they would have started the clock, but who knows? Anyway, the code, the floor of this Westminster Abbey is this this weird piece of artwork that represents the entirety of the universe and the king reigning over it and the beginning and end of the world, the apocalypse. So they were standing right on top of that during the entire wedding. It was pretty weird.
To say the very least. So, I mean, do you see that? I mean, do you take this whole weekend as an interesting kind of confluence of events that is by no means an accident?
I do, you know, and that's, I guess, partially because I tend to be a sort of mystical person anyway. I do believe in meaningful coincidence. I think that, you know, destiny has its way of making things like this happen, you know, but also, you know, you've got the royal family themselves, and they're steeped in tradition, and Prince Charles in particular, interested in mysticism and in the origin of all of these rituals. Where I learned about the meaning of the May Day ritual was out of this, you know, classic anthropology book, The Golden Bough, written by Sir James Frazer in the 1920s. Well, that was one of Prince Charles's favorite books. So he knows all about what the May Day ceremony is completely. And, you know, I wouldn't doubt if he was one of the advisors on how to arrange all of this stuff. There's this other thing that's going on, and as far as I can tell, we're not going to get to see it on TV, but at the reception, they should be consuming cake. I presume that's when they're going to cut up the cake and stuff. And the cake ceremony is going to be weird because traditionally they all eat the same cake, and it's a white cake, and there's actually a tradition about what cake is going to be made out of, what kind of fruit it's going to have in the middle. But William has decided to break with tradition, and he's going to have his own cake served just to him. And it's going to be chocolate, dark chocolate with tea biscuits, and it's some sort of secret family recipe with a secret ingredient that he won't tell anyone about. But what's significant about that is that the May Day ceremony, you know, the old pagan one where they actually killed the temporary king at the end of it, the way they would pick the king was by lot, with this ceremony having to do with cake. They would bake a cake and then cut it up into pieces, and one of the pieces they would stick in the fire and char it so that it was black all the way around, and then they would distribute these to the people at the ceremony at the festival. And whoever got the blackened piece of cake was the king. And so they were, you know, elected to be the king, but they were also marked for death, marked to be the sacrifice of May Day. So it's kind of weird that it seems to me like William is being marked as that sacrifice, you know, ritually at least, for this day. I don't know exactly what that means, but it seems kind of ominous to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I feel like even as I was watching the footage of them in the motorcade, essentially, as I was watching it, I had a creepy feeling that I was watching JFK's motorcade in Dealey Plaza.
You know, and then there was something that the bishop said, the Bishop of Canterbury, who was doing the, you know, the sermon or whatever you would call it, the homily. One of the things he was instructing the bride and groom on how to live, you know, how to be righteous. And he said, present your bodies as a living sacrifice. And then he also said, every wedding is a royal wedding with every bride and groom, the king and queen of creation. So, you know, he's drawing these parallels not only with ritual sacrifice, but with the king and queen sort of representing everybody, and, you know, by partaking in, by watching this ceremony, it's really your wedding too, you know, and every time you get married, it's connected to the same, you know, sacred symbolism, the same pattern. So, you know, what I think is interesting is that they're kind of coming right out about the fact that, hey, we're doing this because, we want to cheer people up about how crappy the economy is. I heard a report about that just last night. It was actually on the news. It says, the royal family is really hoping to brighten people's spirits in the age of austerity. And so they've hired 5,000 police guards and then 10,000 special guards, and not to mention, you know, God knows what else the British taxpayer is paying for this. And, you know, they're, of course, prancing around in their gilded carriages and their fluffy garments and things like that. And, you know, it's kind of like, I just can't imagine that cheering you up, and if you were just experiencing benefits cuts and joblessness and things like that. But, hey, I'm not British. I guess I don't get it.
Well, so I think as we start to wrap this up, and again, I really appreciate you taking the time and talking to us here kind of so early in the morning, but as we're essentially discussing these sort of, you know, bloodlines and families and birthrights, can we make any kind of connection also and tie in the quote-unquote revelation this week of Obama's birth certificate?
That's
just a thought.
I don't know. I hadn't really thought of that, but
I hadn't really either.
You know, it is. I do think maybe, I don't know, something. It feels like something's about to happen, and that this isn't it. One of the things I thought of is that in Britain, at least, they're taking the day off for this thing, so it's an extra bank holiday. It makes a 3-day weekend, so that gives the banks 3 whole days that, you know, they're probably not going to have a run if they can avoid it. You know, it'll be easy for them to, like, shut down the ATMs and just... What I'm saying is I think that, you know, by doing this, it's possible that if we're about to have a major financial situation this weekend, that, you know, this sort of provides extra distraction and have a buffer against panic, if you can get people to sort of, you know, get wrapped in the reverie of this and then take an extra day off on Friday. Because, yeah, what I, the next shoe that I feel is about to drop just, you know, on global geopolitics is I think that we're about to have a major currency collapse here. You know, of course, I've been saying that for a while, but it's like, wow, we're really on the precipice of something major today. And I'm sure you've been talking about that. So I know I'll wrap it up here and just leave you with that. I think that the royal wedding was fun, but we're about to enter into something that's not going to be fun at all.
That cuts it pretty tightly, puts it pretty plainly.
Oh, one thing I would like to mention, though, the things that I discussed today and more will all be in a book that is coming out on May 2nd, and you can pre-order it now. Coming out on May 2nd as an e-book and potentially as a print book later, but we just want to get it out sort of right away. And it's going to be written by me and Clyde Lewis, the local radio presenter. It's called Antichrist 2012, Will Prince William Be the King of the World? So you can get that at libertycappress.com.
Excellent. And I'll provide those links. And yes, our friend Clyde Lewis of groundzeromedia.org, I believe as we speak right now, is pulling off some type of publicity stunt and performing a wedding ceremony at the Burger King. Do you know anything about that?
I had made some jokes earlier in the evening in this chat room, and I posted a video that was about how the royal family is illegitimate, and it was made by a claimant to a royal house, a different royal house. And anyway, at the end of the video, it says, it shows a Burger King crown, so I can see that. Yeah, it's sort of an apt joke that, you know, I think royalty is this sacred concept in the ancient world, but in modern times, especially for Americans, it just doesn't translate. And you think about Burger King when you think of it.
Well, and I think, you know, last fall on the 9th anniversary of 9/11, Clyde and I think kind of successfully pulled off a sort of publicity stunt concerning, you know, burning the 9/11 commission book, using the hysteria surrounding the Quran burning. So I think again he's making a smart move by using the mass amount of attention on this wedding to then draw attention to other things.
Absolutely. Well, that sounds like it's going to be hilarious, and I can't wait to see what comes of it.
All right, Tracy Twyman, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, the New World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.